The Wrong Ghostbusters, the Flintstones kids yab to the dab, and Ben Affleck plays his first DC superhero. This week on 302010. 302010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say. Hi, everybody. Welcome to 302010, the internet's leading pop culture time machine. Ooh, I'm messing up my intros here, but I'm the guest host because Brett Elston is not here. I'm Chris Antista. Who else do we have?
Diana Goodman.
Yabba Dabba Dave Rudden.
Yeah. So if you don't know what we do here on 302010, we take a look at this very week in history, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. Help you, like a little portal into exactly what is happening right now. In the past, in three points of the past. How about that? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I still don't have like a good elevator pitch on 302010. It's got to happen. Also, people, quit spelling it with the numbers. It looks like you're throwing out a zip code.
Oh, that's faster.
I know it's faster, but like couldn't get that URL. Anyway, hi. So yes, each week we start out as we always do in 1986. And we've been discussing this in previous episodes. Television in 1986 is non-existent. Movies ramp up. Yeah. It's like Hollywood agreed. Like the movies, the summer owns the movie. The movies own the summer. Yeah. Television will take a rest.
Yeah. Yep.
There are no movies this week at all in all the television debuts.
Yeah, the fall season is ramping up. Labor Day's passed. You can now wear white, or you can stop wearing white.
No more white.
I don't know how that works because
Patty Hearst will Kathleen Turner will kick the shit out of you if you wear white shoes after Labor Day.
All the free video game T-shirts I get are black, so I assume that's fine all year round. We finally kick into TV season. Shall we jump into that? Brett wrote that the Stand By Me is number one. It knocked The Fly off two-week reign of top.
I'd say almost rightfully so, but those are two really great movies. Once again, we did a full-length commentary for Stand By Me. If you like us that much, you can go to lasertime.bandcamp.com, get it a la carte, and patrons at patreon.com/lasertime. Get it for nothing other than what they already spent.
So yeah, this is a big week for premieres starting on September 6th. Diana, I'm sorry. We are going to start with wrestling.
I knew it.
Superstars of Wrestling. It was a WWF's nationally syndicated wrestling show and their flagship show for, 7 years, from 86 until Monday Night Raw debuted in 1993.
Okay. Raw's angle was that it was live.
Yeah, this was taped. Like they would tape a bunch of episodes at once, one at a time, mm-hmm. or a bunch at a time. And, it was where, big fights would happen and, storylines would keep progressing outside of pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. It was a Saturday morning in most markets show.
I remember when wrestling was on Saturday mornings.
It's kind of a shame it isn't. I guess nothing airs on Saturday mornings anymore.
It's very weird. Like, if you look at, network stuff now, they air, infomercials.
Yeah.
Really? This airtime is that unvaluable? You air infomercials? All right.
Throw some syndicated crap up. Yeah. Come on.
But when it comes to Saturday mornings and Big Brutes, there's a better show to be talking about. Here is the intro to it.
See, this is a red herring. What is this old-timey music?
Oh, yeah. Freak out. They're about to spell it.
B-E-D-R-O-C-K. So it's educational.
Wow. I watched a ton of this show. We did a whole episode of Laser Time, the sister show to 302010, about little Toons. Mm-hmm. Because of the success of Muppet Babies, everybody de-aged their classic characters. And Hanna-Barbera did it a lot with Tom and Jerry, with Tom and Jerry Kids, Yo Yogi for Yogi Bear, and all that awful gang of cartoon characters.
Pup
Named Scooby-Doo, which is probably the best one.
Yeah.
And this one I did like as a kid, the Flintstone Kids.
That was more of a... there was a separate show where they aged Pebbles and Bam Bam.
Now, you're lucky I'm here, Dave. Okay. That is technically the second Flintstone show. The last episode of the Flintstones proper aired in 1966. And I give the Flintstones a lot of shit, But I also want to say, like, it's you can't really undercut how much they did for television animation, and it's just that they've been presented. There's we did an episode a while back that they're still on products, that like they're still on Fruity Pebbles, they still have their own vitamins. They're still famous for some reason, despite A, not having made a real episode of the show since 1966. It's not that good.
No.
It has a laugh track. It bothers me.
Even as a little kid, it bothered me.
And the Flintstone Kids is technically the last Flintstone show that ever existed. There were some shorts made for Cartoon Network. There was a preschool show starring Bam Bam in Pebbles. But like, there has... Can you believe that? There has not been a Flintstone show proper since then. But before that, there was a ton of stuff. The greatest package was like the Flintstones and the Shmoo show.
Oh, no.
It was like old Flintstones episodes with Marvel's The Thing.
Okay.
In a package deal. And then there was the Pebbles and Bam Bam comedy app. They all had silly like variety show names where they were teenagers and they were age up. That was the second show. There are like six or seven Flintstone shows that lead up to the Flintstone
show. Devoid of a laugh track? I don't remember there being one.
Well, there wasn't a laugh. I don't know when they added it, but Hanna-Barbera did that like mid-season for a couple of shows.
I guess
shows.
It was Scooby-Doo. Like, can we save like a bit more money on animation? Sure, we'll just have a laugh track and people will be... concentrating on that and not concentrating on the lack of animation happening right
now. Let the people in the audience laugh, Bon, and we can walk another 65 feet on the same background. And that's a cool thing about this. This is one of Mel Blanc's last appearances. Aww. He's reprising Captain Caveman and his son.
Cavey Jr.
Cavey Jr.
Which I will name my son.
And I don't have a lot of love for the show, obviously, but you and I, Dave, I know, maybe you too, Diana, Cartoon Express, the USA Cartoon Express, they not only picked this up, but like all the old Hanna-Barbera garbage.
Oh, yeah. So, Jabberjaw. Like,
yeah, all that stuff.
The first thing I think of when you say Cartoon Express is like, God damn Jabberjaw.
So it's really, it was kind of like if you were a kid and you just watched the William Shatner Star Trek, Next Generation, and Voyager all like in one block next to one another, and you just assumed it was all the same universe and airing at the same time. But yeah, the teenager show is from like the 70s.
But this theme is what sinks in my brain when I think of 1950s music showing up on 1980s programming. It's like, okay, the baby boomers are making this stuff right now trying to force feed like doo-wop and crap.
Yeah,
like that
isn't that
us.
Sort of the conceit that it's like, it's sort of like the 50s for them.
Now, I'm not smart enough to make this article.
Well, this is actually, it's technically not even canon because I think the normal Flintstones show established that Fred and Wilma didn't meet until high school or something.
Oh, so this is like primordial ooze kind of situation.
This is like an alternate universe.
I love that 1980s programming was influenced musically by doo-wop-ishness, and there's no better evidence of that than all the Nickelodeon promos. That's a 1950s style. That's your parents' nostalgia being put in your shows. Yeah. Whereas right now, I watch things like Steven Universe and Teen Titans Go, and it's all the music is very 80s influenced. Mm. It's like it's happening again. It happens in cycles. Weird.
Yes.
But Flintstones Kids. Not a great show, not worth revisiting, but I because I love digging up obscurities, I've dug up, they did have a special, a Just Say No to Drugs special.
Oh, wow.
And this is a fantastic clip.
please tell
don't
me
Don't do rock cocaine.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. Please tell me there's a rock cocaine pun.
And this is featuring a performance from Michael Jackstone.
They're all moonwalking.
Isn't that a little slice of wonderful?
Well, so, that convinced me I should not do drugs unless they're prescribed by a dubious doctor.
And this is like an officially like sanctioned
just
thing
like
for
Elvis,
Jackson.
Baby.
Sounds seems. A lot like Michael Jackson, doesn't
but,
it?
Yeah, but it also could be that guy who did the singing on the...
Dave, is Kip Lennon who did Michael Jackson's singing parts in the Simpsons episode.
But does this have any like not singing parts from Michael Jackson?
I don't think he's involved in any way. They
but
just
it does
go to
have
this
his
concert.
Likeness, which the Simpsons didn't even have. Well,
a little too
not,
white.
Yeah.
A little too white. Not a lot of black representation on the Flintstones. Not even with the kids.
But let's move on from the Flintstones to Popeye. But not the Popeye you're thinking of. On September 7th, 1986, the TV movie Popeye Doyle airs, continuing the story of the character from The French Connection. I had never actually seen those movies.
French Connection is amazing.
Oh, man.
But,
so good.
Yeah. Obviously, whoever played him
Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman did not reprise his role, but someone else of note did.
Really?
Thursday night on TBS. From The French Connection to crime in the city, one tough cop is laying down the law.
It keeps me going.
Ed O'Neill is Popeye Doyle. Thursday night at 10:20 Eastern on TBS.
Wow, Ed O'Neill?
Ed, no criminals.
So pre-Married with Children, he was, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this was,
and we were just talking about
Ed
O'Neill
something. Yeah, it was like a year or so before, but...
he was a very serious actor that got, like, almost horribly typecast forever after his role as Al Bundy in Married with Children.
I mean, I couldn't even help, like, just watching that, like, 15-minute promo, it's like, he's funny.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like to lose, or whatever he said there, but... I didn't actually watch it, but it's very interesting that they would continue like a critically acclaimed movie with a TV movie and basically kill a franchise.
Well, it kind of happens all the goddamn time.
Actually, I think there's a whole bunch of that coming up in 86. Yeah. Skipping ahead, I think Last Days of Patton we got coming up, which is basically a sequel to the George C. Scott movie with George C. Scott again.
Really? Yep. I've never seen that. But
yeah, they don't do that anymore, I'm sure. I'm sure it's weird because I feel like they could because so few companies own the stuff that NBC Universal could just make a TV show out of anything, or just a TV movie or whatever, just try it as a pilot and maybe see if people want to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be easier now, but they wisely don't do that.
Yeah, they made a ton of acquisitions. I don't know why they don't do it more, actually, which is also why I don't watch that network much anymore. Did for the Olympics, though. So, objectively, the biggest TV debut would be Oprah.
Yes, Oprah went national on September 8th, 1986. So for about 2 years, she had been hosting a talk show in the Chicago area and, like, took that... Like, she started in a slot that her network was rated number four in and then took them to number one within a couple months and did the same thing on the national stage. So, September of 86, she starts, Oprah Winfrey show on...
For our foreign listeners or younger listeners, it's difficult to describe the climate of television at the time when we say syndication and networks and that, like... Yeah, you had these little talk shows in your hometown, and if you lived in a bigger city, there was just a local Oprah show.
Yeah.
Hers was just better. What made it better? I'm not really sure.
I don't know. I mean, some of it was her, and that there were some female talk shows, but not as many. I think she was kind of the first big one.
Yeah.
And that it was, some kind of the flashier sort of topics, the kind of knee-jerk reaction, want to get your attention type stuff, but there was also lots of talking about... Even in the early days, feelings and kind of like overcoming your problems and improving yourself as a person. And it really addressed a female audience. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good
I never thought of her as the first female talk show host. But
all the other ones I'm thinking of, they all come after.
And, and of course, we take Oprah for granted just because I feel like she's been around for as long as I've been
ubiquitous.
Paying attention. So I don't know anything about her show. Other than those clips you see of like,
you get a car.
You get a car, or let's come out against the Ninja Turtles.
But on the national stage, within, months, she would double the ratings of her closest competitor, who's Donahue. But it was kind of a testament to how good she is at it. Yeah. Like, she's great at just, like, connecting with people, and, like, I was just reading, like, reviews of her at the time. Like, people were saying, like, she's so down home, and, like, she can get things, quotes or stories out of people during interviews that nobody else can because she just engages with them on such a personal level, whereas Donahue, what am I going to say to that guy?
He always looked mean.
Yeah.
And I feel so old.
I don't want to talk to my dad about this, but I'll talk to this kindly lady about
it. Who looks even older and like he's had it with all of us. I feel so old. I was such a massive SNL fan.
Yeah.
My family and I were taking a trip to New York. This is, pre-internet, so there's, it's really hard to get tickets for SNL. They're free, but they're in a lottery system. You never know what day you're going to be there. But all I want to do when I got to New York is go to the SNL set and see it. And I did, and, it was, at the time, Conan O'Brien was filming in there. And then I get up to the Saturday Night Live set, and it's been deconstructed so Jay Leno can shoot a fucking week of television from New York. So Jay Leno ruined another show for me. The set I did get to spend the most time on was Donahue. Donahue was in Rockefeller Center at the time. That's how old I am. I've been to the Donahue set.
Wow.
So
how about the Mike Douglas show? You been there?
No. Oh, Jesus Christ. I wasn't born smoking.
I wish I could have got there because he came out of Philly too. I feel like that.
So a slightly less popular talk show that began on September 8th was Nightlife, a half hour late night show hosted by David Brenner, which only lasted until June of the next year.
Oh.
But the more prescient September 8th debut is a show that let's have the intro tell us who they are.
Let's go, Ghostbusters!
Yes, let's go. The Filmation Ghostbusters.
A great, great mm-hmm. song for a terrible fucking show.
Yeah.
Ooh, just an abysmal program.
And, yeah.
And we just, as a kid, we were so confused. Like, what the fuck? There's a show called Ghostbusters that has no Slimer.
Nope.
And it took me years to figure out.
A guy in a zoot suit.
Tracy, and this is where things get interesting. We pointed out on Laser Time, I think, when Ghostbusters was coming out, that this what not only was Ghostbusters not a new concept, Bob Hope had done a similar films, as had Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, both directed by the same guy. but, like, Filmation in 1975 created a television show called The Ghostbusters, starring
Larry Storch.
Larry Storch and
I love Larry Storch.
And here I have a little bit of that intro.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't that also have a gorilla?
It did have a gorilla. The gorilla is actually the only consistent thing from the the live action show, because the cartoon is the sons of Larry Storch and that I read about Forrest Tucker from F Troop again.
Right.
F Troop, who remembers?
We're the Ghostbusters.
I'm Spencer. He's Tracy.
I'm Kong.
We're the Ghostbusters. We're clever, courageous, and strong.
All right.
Jesus Christ.
So it's two guys, Spencer and Tracy.
The gorilla's wearing a beanie with like a propeller on it.
So that's my favorite bit of trivia. That's my favorite bit of trivia is that inside the gorilla suit is a famous locally famous LA man, Bob Burns. He has a kind of hard to find documentary about him called Beast Wishes. He's very famous on the LA scene for his Halloween presentation. What Bob Burns is a little kid who was born in Hollywood and obsessed with monsters and sci-fi before anybody else was. So I think he has this awesome story about as a little kid, and someone just gave him the Wolfman's cane.
Whoa.
And from there, he's got the Plan 9 saucers. He's got the Time Machine.
Whoa.
From he's got the Alien Queen. He's got the original King Kong. And so he became like just adored by the special effects community. And he's not an actor, but he is inside the monkey suit. And I became fascinated by him just recently because he's one of the leading sources. Remember a long time ago we did a show, we talked about FX, about a special effects guy brought on to be a secret agent for the government.
Right.
And I said that was actually based at the time, when we didn't know it at the time, a man named John Chambers made the Planet of the Apes makeups, made Spock's ears, but he's also who John Goodman plays in Argo.
Right.
He has worked for the government before. It's not necessarily confirmed that he faked the Bigfoot footage. And Bob Burns is the source in this. It's apparently like just common knowledge in the special effects community that it's literally a Lost in Space outfit shot on a terrible film in the middle of the woods. And it was done by John Chambers. And Bob Burns is like the leading source of like, yeah, I thought you didn't know that? And he since denied it, which makes it seem more true. But love Bob Burns. Why did I talk so long about Bob Burns? What else we got?
So the Filmation Ghostbusters.
Filmation made the show.
Right.
Like, I always thought of them as an animation house because they created He-Man and again changed the animation landscape.
I mean, the word Mation is in their name.
Yeah, exactly. So they made the live-action Ghostbuster show in 1975. Columbia had to license the name, I think, for like $500,000 just to make their Ghostbusters movie.
Wow.
And again, you probably can see how the story played out. I love how, like, when someone's like a celebrity's late to Twitter, they have to be like the real Miley Cyrus,
like the real Donald Trump.
Yeah, yes, exactly. This happened that long ago. Like the Ghostbusters had to call their show the Real Ghostbusters,
real
because
presidential candidate.
Filmation was like pretty pissed off. They didn't receive enough of the back end, so they just started their own show and they managed to beat the real actual Ghostbusters show to market. And we'll talk about that in the next episode.
This obviously didn't have the same staying power. I believe it was done within one or two seasons.
It's like 15 episodes of the live action show. Yeah. It's like 20 or something of the cartoon.
And meanwhile, we'll talk
about
it.
But it's all on Hulu.
Yeah. And my The one memory I have of Filmation's Ghostbusters is that I had an action figure of somebody from the show, and it wasn't the monkey.
See,
it was a guy in a zoot suit.
That's the real tragedy of the confused parents trying to do right by their child.
That's probably why they got it from me. Yeah. Like, give me a Ghostbuster.
I know he likes Ghostbusters, and that's what this says in the label. God damn it.
And it's half the price of the other Ghostbusters toys. So even more stuff from September 8th. Superior Court, a court show that had fictional reenactments of real court cases.
Yeah, I aired
for like 3 years and, you know, went on the whole court craze of like the late 80s. But more importantly, Silverhawks, an animated series much in the vein of Thundercats.
Mm-hmm.
But it was about a group of heroes who wear metal bodies and have giant wings and they fight crime in space.
Yeah. It's a beautiful intro sequence.
According
to Brett's notes, Venus is number one. What the fuck is Venus?
Yeah. Oh, the Bananarama song?
Skinny Puppy is a new mind, the perpetual intercourse. The B-52s bouncing on satellites has a somber album that didn't get much promotion because their guitarist, Ricky Wilson, had recently died of AIDS.
That album had the Morning Check. It's the place where we get together to mourn our
And Brett has it listed that he wants to go out with Stacey Q's Two of Hearts because it's on the charts this week, even though it debuted in January. But I wanted to bring up real fast this week in history, the third annual MTV Music Awards had aired. The third annual Music Awards hosted by only the VJs. It was a very lo-fi affair in both set in both New York and Los Angeles. And I wanted to see if you could guess the WinRARs. Oh, of the Best New Artist category. Here we go.
Paula, Take On Me.
Hells yeah.
One runner, I would say.
Yep.
Hooters and We Dance.
Hey, it's a good song. Terrible band.
Never heard this thing.
Whitney Houston.
Oh,
How Will I Know?
Shoot.
Hearing again in 30-20-10.
Pet Shop Boys.
This is like a Murderer's Row of like classics.
Simply Red, Holding Back the Years.
Get out of here, Simply Red.
And the winner is...
Now, would anybody like to take a guess at who the WinRAR was?
I mean, it should be Whitney Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Aha, but I'm betting it's Simply Red just because it'll disappoint me.
Diana?
I'll go with Pet Shop Boys then. Let's mix it up.
Oops. Excuse me about this. Aha, Take On Me.
Yeah.
And so that night, Aha swept the Video Music Awards with Most Experimental Music Video, Best New Artist, and the Viewer's Choice Award in addition to Best New Artist.
Career only went up from there.
It kind of embody what is a one-hit wonder, and my favorite factoid, the director of that video, on the strength of that amazing, just seriously, objectively amazing video.
So good.
Went on to direct the Ninja Turtles movie.
Oh, wow.
But with that, I say, why not take out 1986 with Aha's Take On Me, because we won't have another shot at it.
Yeah.
All right.
When we get back, we will talk about what happened in movies, music, games, news in 1996. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. I woke up with my girlfriend shaking me like, what happened? What happened? I'm like, what are you talking about? And like, I think you just vomited blood all over all of our pillows. So like, whatever that thing that happened, I'm not very healthy, as you guys can attest, but I spent Saturday and Sunday being like, very nice to myself.
I didn't slamming ibuprofen with whiskey.
But it wasn't like...
You're also probably not hydrating.
The reason why you don't drink and take basic over-the-counter painkillers, that happened to me, and I will never do it again. Never.
Did you take pictures of the bloody...
No, I don't think I threw up. I think it was just like something went bleh. Because I didn't wake up when it happened.
Like when a baby spits up.
I think something like that.
Like when a baby coughs up blood.
Because wouldn't you wake up if you threw up?
I mean, some people die by throwing up
and
just choking on
them. Oh, yeah, but it wasn't like... I know what my vomit looks like after a night of drinking. And this is not that. This looked like maybe a
light splatter, like a small cup of tomato soup as opposed to like a big bowl of minestrone.
Exactly. Not a big bowl of minestrone, but more like half a cup of tomato paste. Okay. Diluted tomato paste. Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. Thank you for bringing us in, Pac. Yes, 1996 in music. Pet Shop Boys had their album Bilingual. Jennifer Love Hewitt releases her third album. Macarena is still number one.
God damn it.
But that is California Love by Tupac Shakur and Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Is he in that? Very expensive music video. Because Tupac has been shot and killed this
week. Yeah, we've come in with that before, but who the hell cares? It's such a jam.
Like Tupac was shot and killed, and Jesus Christ, I can't believe it's been 20 years.
He was 25.
Yeah. That's so bizarre that so many of these people I looked up to that I'm so much older than them now and achieved nothing.
Like, you're a baby.
Yeah.
You're probably not even moved out of the house yet, Tupac.
It seems like a very strange time. I was rewatching a bit of Boys in the Hood, just like the I don't know. Are people getting shot less these days or more? I can't tell.
Less.
I think. You think so?
Statistically, yes.
Yeah, I think it's statistically less. It's just more people are shooting it with their iPhones.
yeah.
So I'm seeing it more. But yeah, the West Coast, East Coast, West Coast gangster rap feud. I don't want to sound like a mainstream news person, but it was a very weird time to watch the music industry. I guess I wasn't, you know, Biggie shot in retaliation. To this murder.
And then it's still like, we still aren't quite sure who killed Tupac.
Yeah.
Who knew about it? Did anyone cover it up?
He's probably still alive. The coolest news I saw recently was that the first responder, revealed what Tupac said his last words.
Really?
Yes, after 20 years of silence.
Benghazi.
Jet fuel can't melt. It's weird. He said, I didn't want to say it because I thought it... I didn't want hero worship to result from this, but the officer shows up. Here, stay still, let me help you. And Tupac's final words were, fuck you. fuck you. And the officer's right. Like, what a fucking badass way to go out by telling the cop, fuck you, as your last words. But, you know, I understand why he kept it a secret. He didn't want people to know what Tupac said and, I don't know, galvanize that kind of behavior towards cops.
Oh, that's funny.
We miss you, Pac. Again, if you want to come back, please make your debut on one of our podcasts. Let everybody know. It'll be great.
Actually, you know, I have to say, I was not, you know, I'm a white girl from San Francisco, so I was not following rap very much, but it seemed to me not just that the murders of Biggie and Tupac were obviously huge deals and snuffed out two people with a lot of talent. It seemed like they drove the rest of the music industry for a couple of years. It was like nonstop memorial songs.
I've always wanted to do a Laser Time episode on sad homie songs.
Yeah.
Because that kicked off that craze. I'll be missing you.
So many songs that, you know, where they got a shout out at the end. Yeah, Tupac. I've been mourning you till I be joining you.
The Bone Thugs and Harmony song.
Yeah.
End of the Road,
that one?
Yeah.
Or is that them?
But fucking masterpiece. I really miss my homies.
Yeah.
Even though they're gone away. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I'll be missing you. I thought it was so crass.
A bunch of weird hip hop ballads in the wake of this.
I feel like, the one person who benefited from these deaths was Puff Daddy, so... Mm-hmm. Let's look at him as a suspect. Yeah.
That's probably the biggest tragedy. Yeah. I might have gone around to liking the guy.
Diddy
again,
and
I can't
Mace,
tell.
That's a
I can't tell.
Terrible curse upon humanity.
Guess what? The movies are terrible.
The
movies are terrible. This is
so
normally my time to shine, but we have a terrible trailer for a movie I've never heard of called Bogus.
Bogus.
He's got a friend.
Can't tell you anything about him because he's invisible, and I can't see him.
Even younger Haley Joel Osment has an invisible friend.
What a complete mismatch of talents.
Yep.
three really big movie stars. I mean, Gerard Depardieu.
Gerard Depardieu playing the title, like, the imaginary title character, Bogus, and Whoopi Goldberg.
He plays the imaginary friend of Haley Joel Osment, yes. And what Whoopi Goldberg is like his.
I feel like if I said Haley Joel Osment and Gerard Depardieu and Whoopi Goldberg were in a movie, you wouldn't believe me.
Yeah.
But it did happen in 1996.
God, who would want Gerard Depardieu as their imaginary friend? Yeah. Like, my imaginary friend won't stop drinking.
My imaginary friend's puffy and eats too much.
That sounds great, actually. I'll go for that.
Yeah.
But also, more notably, this little trailer.
Friends. Everything we do, we split down the middle, right?
Of course we do. We're partners.
But every friendship.
You're the only guy I've ever trusted in my entire life.
Hits the occasional bump in the road.
You're under arrest.
You better be messing around.
You have the right to remain silent.
How can you do this to me?
So the movie...
I can't believe you betray me, Cameron Wayne.
I can't believe I was in a movie that bombed this hard. Look, I'll be honest. Again, big SNL fanboy at this point in my life. Way on board with Adam Sandler before the rest of the world. Had his album the second it came out.
It's so strange, snuck
out of my house to see Billy Madison alone. I think my first seeing a movie alone instance. Love Billy Madison. Love Happy Gilmore. And this is like... Sandler was on a roll, and this is kind of his first bomb, but it's also... It probably led to him wanting to form Happy Madison Productions because this doesn't involve him or his friends.
Yeah.
Who directed this film? It's really interesting. Ernest Dickerson, who has gone on to direct... he directed Demon Knight, Surviving the Game, and a bunch of episodes of Walking Dead.
Wow.
And it apparently is one of a pivotal player in The Wire. Mm. He directed a bunch of episodes of The Wire, but he said this movie was... originally intended to be like a 48 hours hard R.
Right.
Mm. And they, in the editing room, like, nah, it's got to be PG-13. Jesus. It's like, we lost like actual storylines, like entire scenes and moments and things we couldn't reshoot. And it's just, the movie got neutered.
So I get two problems with it. Bulletproof. Mm-hmm. We've said it's called Bulletproof.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Bulletproof, baby. 1996 is Bulletproof.
Yeah. Obviously.
Starring Damon Wayans and Adam Sandler.
Obviously based on the Radiohead song.
No.
But here's your problem. 48 hours, you have a straight man and a funny man.
Yeah.
And Damon Wayans, funny guy. Adam Sandler, allegedly funny guy. who's a straight man? It seems to be Wayans.
Yeah.
So no matter what you do, you're neutering one of them.
But Wayans was definitely the straight man. I think he plays an undercover cop who befriends Adam Sandler, and Adam Sandler treats him like his best friend. Mm.
Right.
Then he reveals, I'm a cop, and Adam Sandler accidentally shoots him in the head. And Damon Wayans recovers. There's a... whole informant plot, but basically Damon Wayans needs to get him, Adam Sandler, across the country while he's in police custody, and he's still mad. They're both incredibly mad at one another before A, the arrest, B, being shot in the head.
This is being pitched as 48 Hours meets Midnight Run.
Totally, totally. Okay. Thank you for bringing up Midnight Run. I had to talk to Dave about that recently. What
freaking
a great
movie.
Film.
But it's astonishing that I never saw this movie because in the mid-90s, I loved me some Adam Sandler and Damon Wayans movies.
Yeah,
like
Blank
Man and Major Payne.
Totally.
You know, they probably have aged poorly, but I love them.
Totally. I'm coming out now as an Adam Sandler. We will poke fun at Adam Sandler. We will be poking fun at Adam Sandler if you check our YouTube channel around the same time. but this is you might remember this clip a little more.
But you're glad you gave me that gun.
Bulletproof.
Will you shut up? Shut the hell up!
You'll always be my bodyguard. You know that.
Bulletproof. And that's I think the bummer about Damon Wayans. He had a leading serious role in The Last Boy Scout.
Yeah.
But Damon Wayans is so funny and great as characters.
Yeah.
Major Payne, we did rewatch. Yeah. Fucking great.
Really?
It's an awesome movie. Yes, it's fantastic.
We even it was during one of the
Shitlord movies?
Shitlord movies. I was missing that with shit show. But Shitlord's like where we purposely watch bad movies and we all thought like Major Payne, this movie's gonna blow, and we're like, no, this is good.
This is a perfectly fine comedy film.
I have a vague recollection of Entertainment Weekly giving it an F.
Yeah, but critics are terrible to comedies.
Which they never do though. Mm. Entertainment Weekly loves everything.
Yeah. But that's people hated Blank Man. I love Blank Man. Yeah. I love Damon Wayans as a character, but I think he wanted I'm a leading man star. I'm like, your voice is so stupid. I cannot buy you as a macho. Will you shut up? Like, why are you the leading tough guy?
You're under arrest.
This should not be. You should just be a funny man, Damon Wayans. I love you.
I could have been a contender.
Well, I guess we have to move on to TV.
Yes. So
TV in 1996.
Again, we're kind of packed full of debuts and big ceremonies. So the Emmys were this week, and they were hosted by Michael J. Fox, Paul Reiser, and Oprah. What a trio.
Woo!
Frasier won Best Comedy, ER won Best Drama, John Lithgow won Best Comedic Actor for 30 Rock. Sorry, Third Rock.
30 Rock from the Sun.
Yes.
Right. Helen Hunt. Which was in its first season, I think. We had it really early in the run of the show. I think it was a mid-season replacement.
I couldn't believe how ready to embrace that show everybody was. It seems like that kind of sitcom you'd make fun of. Immediately, but was a ratings winner and won a bunch
and
of awards.
It's really good.
I mean, it wasn't a serious comedy like Mad About You, which Helen Hunt won Best Comedic Actress for. Dennis Franz won Best Dramatic Actor for NYPD Blue, and Kathy Baker won Best Dramatic Actress for Picket Fences.
Who remembers Picket Fences?
Not
Jesus
me.
Christ.
Well, I do. I think we just had it when it left the air, like a couple months ago.
But a bunch of debuts this week. September 2nd was the debut of Arthur, which is a show about a balled up fist, apparently. I've only seen the memes.
Every day when you're walking down the
street.
Everybody that you meet. As an original point of view.
It's very weird. I love cartoons. I still watch cartoons to this day. I've never seen any of this.
Well, it debuted when we were like in our teens, so it's not for us.
Just telling you, I watch Cartoon Network every weekend.
But there are like CEOs and like people of power in this world that watched Arthur as children.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
Yeah, I think that's a little weird. Arthur's now a meme. I think the creators were like, we're very uncomfortable with this.
Yeah.
Showing Arthur depicting a public television kid's children. Your government is literally paying for this.
Yeah.
As someone who wants to constantly fuck or has a rage boner all the time.
It's just a fist about it. I think it's supposed to represent anger of some sort, but the show is still on the air today. Like,
that's crazy.
Which is insane. And I'm sorry that we're not giving it the attention
it
needs, but like, please comment about it below this this podcast to better
please
give
fill
us,
us
better
in
insight.
All the Arthur trivia that you have.
I
want to know.
One piece of trivia.
What's that,
I know, because it's one of these things where like you pass it every now and then on TV early in the morning, whatever, to find out he's supposed to be an aardvark. Blows my mind.
What's every aardvark I've ever seen, again, only in cartoons, giant nose.
Yeah.
He looks like a capybara.
He has a big fist.
Yeah.
In that.
Yes, he does. You're right. He looks like a capybara.
Yeah, what the hell, Arthur? What else is happening to you?
So let's make a complete left turn on September 3rd. I Miss in the Mornings radio show starts to be aired simultaneously live on MSNBC, which I have to imagine they did that because Howard Stern had all that success on E! Entertainment Television with that. Like, it wasn't even the live show. It was just like a truncated, like, 30-minute bit of Howard Stern.
Show me your boobies.
Yeah, I Miss in the Morning was like that was always my dad's radio show.
Yeah, I don't
like,
know what that
Dad,
was.
I want to listen to Howard Stern. No, we're going to listen to this crappy
Von
imitation.
Imus, very serious. I'm
no,
also
he's
funny.
Still trying to be funny. It's like he was technically a shock jock, but it's just like this guy's too old.
Yeah, he got fired from both MSNBC and his show from the nappy headed hose comment.
Yeah,
which I'll probably get in trouble for. Jesus, why did I say that?
Two other premieres on that very same day: The Burning Zone, a UPN show about a team of agents who could teleport anywhere instantaneously to fight biological warfare.
Wow.
The other show, Chris, was Quack Pack. A show about Donald Duck and his nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Now, this is very weird. You might remember the theme song. I bet you don't.
Quack, 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 quack.
So, like, this is a very blip on my memory because, like, I love that I pointed out to Dave that, like, I love the Disney Afternoon. Probably would have still been watching it, but by this point, it was bonkers and marsupilami. Disney Afternoon had been busted down to 6 a.m. To 6 a.m. in my town. So I remember Quack Pack. I heard about it by looking at the TV schedule because I was TV obsessed. And what the fuck is Quack Pack? No one ever promoted this. Yeah. It just sort of got lost. 39 episodes, one season.
So I have to imagine it was partly influenced by, again, Howard Stern, the Whack Pack.
Nah.
It was there like a crackhead Huey and...
It was. I think it was based on the success of DuckTales, but it was inspired more by Donald's short cartoons. By Goof Troop. Yeah. And that most of Donald's, his best short cartoons are when he's being fucked with by his nephews and especially Chip and Dale. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing they did, and this is the one time they did this, I love being able to point this out. I love that we've had the up until recently, we've had a consistent Scrooge McDuck voice actor for 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
And Scrooge debuted in theatrical shorts in the 60s, and the Nephews debuted at the same time. They all stem from Carl Barks comics, and the Nephews were originally just sounded like Donald. Come DuckTales, Sports Goofy, Jesus, look at my Roger Rabbit article, terrible, terrible stealth pilot for DuckTales from 1982, aired way later because it's terrible. Rusie Taylor, you may know her from The Simpsons, she does the voice of all the Nephews, still does, except for this one time where they decided, well, what we're going to do is we're going to differentiate the Nephews, and they're all going to have different voices. So for me, this is bizarre to hear.
Come on, kiddo, you talked Uncle D into bringing us along. Hey, little brother, I told you I'd handle it. All I had to do was promise to...
So that's...
That's some generic-ass kid voice right there.
Yeah, but it's very weird, because usually Disney sticks with its decisions, or in other cases completely buries them, but like this was reverted immediately. The Nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie instantly got reverted.
What do they call Donald? Uncle Donald?
Uncle Donald.
And who is their dad? They never just have a
story. They imply their mother dies, but it's just their mother was dead. But I think it was the thing that Disney didn't want to close the book on, like, conflict with Mickey and Minnie and Daisy and Donald and by marrying them. So then they couldn't have kids if they're not married. It's the 50s. And so they all
none of our cartoons Nephews. Ever fuck, except on DeviantArt.
Except for Goofy. Goofy, really? Yes. Goofy has a son and has since the 1950s.
But my wife does.
Again, I feel like I'm just showing off with my Disney knowledge here.
I like to imagine that one of the kids is Barry White. It just really went the opposite direction.
Oh, Uncle Donald.
Exactly. I developed thirst.
Oh, man.
September 4th. Brett's not really here. Wish Brett was here, but yeah, the third season premiere of Star Trek Voyager, Jesus, can't even say the name right. Yeah. Brett's rolling in his grave. He's not dead. It was entitled Basic Part 2, so it was a cliffhanger from the previous season. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. According to Memory Alpha, with the Kandani stream in control of Voyager, the crew must return to basics in order to survive a harsh world inhabited by alien natives and vicious predators.
Voyager, I believe everyone's least favorite Star Trek show, if not Enterprise.
Yeah, I think Enterprise.
Enterprise, okay.
But let's get back to Ducks, because September 6th, 1996, we had the premiere of The Mighty Ducks, the cartoon, based on the NHL team, based on the movie. As well as Superman the Animated Series.
This is such a parody of what it is to be a corporate giant. Yeah. I almost don't think
it happened. I'm so glad Disney bought Marvel and Lucasfilm so they have other things to do instead of this ridiculousness. Because,
what, the Mighty Ducks, was that just a team they started or bought?
They started it.
Okay.
There hadn't been one in Anaheim.
There's the Emilio Estevez movie series, The Mighty Ducks. They create an NHL team. By the way, I had the hat for the Mighty Ducks logo. It's a great logo. The duck face mask. And then base a action cartoon based on the hockey team that Disney owns. I believe they've sold the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, they're still called the Ducks. The Ducks. Now they're just the Ducks of Anaheim. But yeah, Superman the Animated Series also debuted that day. I have the intro here.
Yeah.
This actually debuted in prime time, which is kind of amazing.
Well, it was
for WB, which
kind
is
kind of a big deal.
But just like, if you watch the intro and just like this music kind of invokes like a Superman that sorely missed, like just the not mopey savior of America,
symbol
kind of
hope.
Like
square jaw puncher of trucks.
But this is also, and I love pointing this out, because there's Batman the Animated Series is so great, and even though it's a cartoon spinoff, it did go on to inform, I think, almost like 80% of what kids who grew up think about Batman is informed by Batman the Animated Series. It's also, and I love this statistic, it is the most spun-off show of all time, because this technically counts, because I believe the premiere tried to tie it in just tangentially to Batman the Animated Series. Yeah. Okay. But yes, has this is a spin-off of that show. It's great. It's another Bruce Timm, Paul Dini joint who have been in some ways better for DC than a lot of their comics. Their animation output has been really great, and they even have like their own straight-to-video studio that still cranks out animation. Let's not bring up Killing Joke.
It's the team of Tim and Teeny.
Yes.
So Dini. You call them Teeny Tim.
No. Yes. But yeah, this is pretty great. I didn't see much of this show because, again, I mean, as we keep talking about, I did not have this went to the WB. I did not have that in my town. No WB affiliate. So I couldn't see the series, even though I wanted to.
Well, hopefully you were able to see some more of the amazing slate of cartoons that debuted this week. September 7th, 1996, the premiere of Road Rovers, which, what it, just picture the the Road Rover's in your head.
Sure.
But there's also another premiere which is much more notable that day. Well, Road Rovers is about dogs that drive cars and fight crime. They're Road Rovers. But the more important premiere of September 7th, 1996 is this show.
Three typical average kids inside a haunted mansion. Ooh. Just by chance, read a ghost to make them Beetleborgs.
We did a whole Laser Time show of Power Rangers ripoffs back in the day. LaserTimePodcast.com.
So something I've noticed is that this was like about 2 years after, you know, Power Rangers made it big. And like even Power Rangers is starting to wane at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, Big Bad Beetleborgs, another show from Saban, who did Power Rangers.
Did they license Japanese footage for this?
Yes. That's exactly, that's, I mean, every one of their shows is basically like, we have this new Sentai show that we're taking footage from and shoehorning into some American story. But this one's about a group of kids who have the ability to turn into insect robots to fight classic monsters.
Yay.
Including one guy that looks just like Jay Leno, but the Dracula. And it would air for two seasons until March of 1998. So moving on to the next day, September 8th, Blue's Clues debuted on Nick Jr. We recently talked about the final episode airing in 2006.
Oh, wow.
So we've got a 30-20-10 inception. We closed the loop.
We did. Wow.
Yeah. And last but not least, also this same day, a slate of UPN kids shows begins their run, including a show called Bureau of Alien Detectors, The Mouse and the Monster, but more importantly, two shows, The Incredible Hulk and Jumanji.
Wow.
So Jumanji was designed by Everett Peck, who was the creator of Duckman.
That show is so great, by the way, and underrated.
But it's so weird because, like, Duckman has a very ugly, intentionally ugly design.
Jarring, garish, angular.
Yeah, which works for that.
Yeah.
Does not really work for Jumanji.
Holy shit, is that what it looks like?
When you hear Jumanji, the cartoon, you expect like, beautiful animals and like maybe even like CGI or something. But
hyper-distorted urban ruin.
Yeah, but not like
of Duckman.
Not squat people with big faces. It's like, ugh, it doesn't really work. And The Incredible Hulk, I don't know if you know much about that show. In the same week, a Superman cartoon and an Incredible Hulk cartoon. That's amazing.
And I was a Marvel Comics guy, still love DC Comics, but was really in love with Marvel Comics during this period. And DC shows were way better the whole time. Oh man, we have one of them coming up.
The Hulk cartoon actually included the voice of Lou Ferrigno, but only as the Hulk, because you don't want to hear Lou Ferrigno do the voice of Bruce Banner.
He's gotten a lot of mileage out of that role.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's pretty insane, because he's in all the movies with cameos. Mm-hmm. I think he's done some video game voice work as the Hulk. It's not like no one else can do that. But whatever, Lou Ferrigno seems like a lovely guy. Actually, the website last I checked was still up, and I used it all the time. Thoughtless gifts that you give to people. There was a website called Hollywood is Calling. Could pay. They had like Mr. Belding there and like the fucking Barbie twins. But I would, if I was like, had a friend who was out of town, didn't want to mail a gift, I would pay $20 or $30 to this site, who would then get Lou Ferrigno to call my friend on their birthday. Hello, this is Lou Ferrigno wishing Justin a happy birthday. $20, not bad. Thank you, Lou.
And
never got to thank you for that.
Yeah, this is a nebulous thing because games coming out in arcades, it's just, you know, who knows. But apparently Virtua Fighter 3 debuted in arcades, like, you know, on a more widespread level. It did location tests in July of 96, but yeah, September 96.
The dates of these are so fuzzy.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll just assume at this point in the month, Virtua Fighter 3 is finally arriving in some arcades. Yeah,
especially in arcades. Like, I was trying, there's like two or three examples I can think of an arcade commercial.
Yeah.
But without a commercial, you don't really set an expectation for a launch date. So like trying to nail down a release date for an arcade machine is almost impossible.
Yeah. I mean, the sad thing about Virtua Fighter 3 is that it never had like a great home port. Mm. What came to Dreamcast like 2 years after, more than 2 years after it was in arcades.
Wow.
And even then it was like not great. It was Virtua Fighter 3 TB. It was a launch game and it was like, there's some issues, but like, the Virtua Fighter 3 was on par with like Tekken 2 and Tekken 3, where it's like
probably more technical.
You put like Virtua Fighter 3 in the arcade next to Tekken 3, like Virtua Fighter 3 looks better, and it's like, granted, like Virtua Fighter 3 takes a lot more finesse and isn't like immediately appealing like Tekken is, but I remember reading like Game Players magazine and like, man, I got to get this Dreamcast because Virtua Fighter 3 is going to kick everyone's butt.
And it's the franchise is still going, but it is saddled with such a dumb name. Virtua Fighter. It was part of Sega's weird, short-lived Virtua series.
Virtua Striker, Virtua Cop, Virtua Racing.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw that, like, walking through an arcade. Virtua?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What?
Get it?
Hey, well.
Just give, I know, I need a pen. I gotta draw the L in. They can trademark Virtua, not Virtual.
Well, that wraps up our 1996 segment, and we are going to go out, as per Elston's recommendations, with the Star Trek Voyager theme.
Oh, nice.
But when we get back, oh yes, we're going to talk about This Week in 2006, movies, news, TV, and more. Stay tuned.
Ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time to see if there's anything worth a watching. And we've got a big anniversary this week. You've probably already heard about it, but Star Trek, the original series, debuted 50 years ago this week, September 8th, 1966. Now, even if you're not a Trekkie or Trekker or whatever, this is kind of a big deal, because it was a view of the future in the middle of the Cold War that was incredibly optimistic. After, you know, a little while, they even brought a Russian guy in, and they're like, see, look, we must be friends with Russians, and there's a black lady there, and there's an Asian guy, and we let him drive. Granted, I have a problem with the original series in that the women only get to be secretaries and nurses. I kind of wish they could, like, be in charge of more stuff, and they have to wear miniskirts, but the go-go boots are pretty sweet, okay? So, I would say in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the original Star Trek in all its Shatnery and Nimoy-y goodness, go back and watch some of the original series. Don't even go to, you know, the movies. I mean, 2, 4, and 6 are awesome. 3 is okay. 1, if you can fast forward. I actually really like, but only if I can fast forward because it's so slow. But, I mean, come on. Trouble with Tribbles, or Mirror, Mirror, or City on the Edge of Forever, Amok Time. Those are all just awesome. Just, yeah, go watch some original series. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Welcome back to 302010. If you couldn't tell by the sound of that music, we are in 2006.
Oh, this is very 2006.
Very 2006. So this week we have Beyonce's B-Day coming out, Basement Jack's Crazy Itch Radio, Justin Timberlake, JT shorthand, Jesus, Brett. But that was Fergie's London Bridge, because it's number one this week.
Stupid.
But yeah, that is music. The biggest news this week is that Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, has died in a freak accident. And it's only a freak accident because it wasn't a crocodile.
Yep.
That was Stingray got me.
Yeah, it wasn't something Oy! That you'd think, you know, stingrays, like, I've pet a stingray. Like, they're just sort of big, floppy pancakes of the sea. That's right, they have a fucking giant spike on their butts.
Yes,
they can get you.
That, I think, pierced his heart, and he died kind of instantly.
I don't know if it was instant. I know there was some talk of that they removed it, and that might have made things worse. They probably should have left it in there.
That would have been great if Steve Irwin had to walk around with a stingray attached to him for the rest of his life.
And touch me.
As he dies at 44, I should have gotten the Norm MacDonald joke because it's great.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, yeah, the crocodile hunter died. And everybody's saying, like, oh, it's so tragic. He died so young. And I'm like, well, how old was he? And he's like, 44. That seems like a ripe old age for a crocodile hunter to die. God, I didn't do it justice. Why did I bother?
Yeah, it's not like he's going to get any better at crocodile hunting.
Oh, but he was, I mean, he was so goofy, but it was so adorable how goofy he was. Just his sheer enthusiasm for anything. I mean, like, I remember seeing him on just random talk shows where they would make him do stupid stuff, and he was always like, yeah, that's a great idea.
He's always game. And
they're like, hey, you want to wrestle that, that pool toy that looks like a crocodile, and he just, like, jumps across his head, like, I have to, yes! Come here!
We got to give him credit for, like, Discovery Channel spun off Animal Planet because it wanted to have one channel focused on just nature and animal documentaries, and I'm pretty sure he brought most people to that channel, I have to imagine.
I think so, yeah.
He's one of the most prominent stars that channel has ever had. But if we want to move into movies, and I really don't because this is not a great week. Actually, no, this is all right.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
Tom Yung-gong, another Tony Jaa movie, localized except for the title. I've only seen two Tony Jaa movies. It doesn't get much better than The Protector just to watch a wrestler throw a baby elephant through a plate glass window. It's amazing.
I mean, I'm sure the Tom Yung-gong movie was good, but I prefer the Tom Yung-gong show.
Yeah, there you go. I don't have my comedy noise, Dave. You can't be doing stuff like this. A movie I've never heard of debuted this week.
They are the descendants of a secret legacy.
Come on, Caleb. It's not like it's going to kill us.
Yeah.
Granted a world of untold power.
Look at that.
But their darkest secret.
What's that?
Caleb's family history.
Before me, I'd be careful.
Was never meant to be shared.
What is this covenant?
There's the titular line we need. The Covenant. Anybody? Hello?
Yes.
You've seen The Covenant?
I've seen The Covenant. This was a Bad Movie Sunday choice.
Oh, wow.
It is so funny. Actually, most of it's really boring, but what they're trying to do, they're trying to kind of cross Twilight with Harry Potter in a way.
Just looking at it, looks like the Avengers meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, because Winter Soldier's in it. But
yes, Sebastian Stan.
But it's about sexy teenage warlocks. And there's an awful lot of dudes with their shirts off having conversations.
Nice. And if you couldn't see in that scene, using magic to blow up a lady's skirt.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Check out her
classy.
Her full black underwear because it's PG-13.
This is like the Chipettes to Fairuza Balk's Craft.
Yes. Yes. No, it totally is. Except the Craft is way better. But yeah, I have to give the Covenant one thing. There's a big male witch fight at the end. And one guy actually says, I'm going to make you my weeotch.
I wish I would have known
that. I'm
out
of here.
I wish I would have known that.
It's really stupid.
Directed by Renny Harlin, who took a pretty enormous fall from grace, I guess you could say.
Oh, yeah.
What was his big movie? Die Hard?
Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
Cliffhanger.
And then right into Cutthroat Island. And,
Long Kiss Goodnight's good, though. I
want to rewatch that so bad.
Yeah. And then Cutthroat Island, and then he went to movie jail.
Yeah, he's in movie jail.
He's been making terrible movies since then.
Taylor Kitsch is also in this.
Taylor Kitsch is in it, sorry.
Would go on to like being two big flops in one year.
Go on to ruin a lot of things, but it's not his fault. But the movie I did watch this week was pretty great, actually. Okay. Hollywoodland.
Based on the true story of Hollywood's most notorious unsolved mystery.
I see the pieces, how they should fit, how I want them to fit.
It's Adrian Brody, who plays a private investigator looking into the death of George Reeves. George Reeves being the man who played Superman, in this case, in flashbacks, all played by Ben Affleck, playing Superman 10 years, almost 10 years to the day before we saw him as Batman.
Wow. Wait, so isn't it an open-shut case? George Reeves died of kryptonite.
It's just one of those fucking Hollywood things, man. I love those old Hollywood mysteries that... I don't know if there was a studio... No, it couldn't have been a studio-based cover-up because George Reeves didn't have a lot of work going on.
Yeah.
But it's...
There could have been because he was having an affair with the wife of someone pretty powerful.
It was played by Bob Hoskins in the movie. It's fucking great.
Is he still doing his, like, untraceable accent?
No, he's English. He's English in this. Oh. But it just... I did like this. It's... So here's... George Reeves plays Superman, then gets kind of typecast, and there's... You know, he was in From Here to Eternity, and the movie depicts his, like, get this guy out of here. Everybody's laughing because Superman is on screen. That apparently is not true.
Right.
Every scene he shot is in From Here to Eternity. Struggled to get work after that. And one night at 1:30 a.m., a police get a much-delayed phone call that George Reeves has shot himself in the head. But not only has he shot himself in the head, there are people in his house, drunk as shit. And he's reported he's in a bad mood because he woke them up. He came down, partied for a little bit, and like left in a bad mood, and then kills himself. So his mother kept forcing the issue of like, I don't think he would have killed himself. And it honestly doesn't make that much.
And there's a lot of things that don't line up. Like he shoots himself, but he like landed on the gun.
Yep.
And there's another bullet hole. It looks like someone tried to cover it up.
And he's naked. And like, and there's even
the bullet bounced off his head.
There's a line in the trailer like, who kills himself at her own party? And like, and I actually weirdly know someone who that happened to. But it's technically solved, ruled a suicide. But dude looks wildly suspect.
And that's one thing I really like about it, that it runs through a bunch of the different scenarios and how it could have been like this.
Yeah. Not it could have been a mafia hit. Yeah. It could have been done accidentally by his fiance, which seems the most plausible if I have to be honest. But it's just like, if you just think of a suicide, you don't, well, fuck you guys, I'm leaving. Kill self. Nobody does that. Like, you would leave the room dejected. You don't walk away pissed and kill yourself. That doesn't get back at anybody, especially not naked in the house with a bunch of people in it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It looks super shady to me, but a very well-done movie.
Yeah.
And an interesting look at, like, the phenomenon that Superman became as a TV show. And I love that he's 40 playing Superman. Superman's usually played by people a little bit older.
I don't know. The one reason to kill yourself at a party is like, if people are drunk, their emotions are heightened. And one of the things I sometimes think is like, man, if I was dead, people would be so sad. And imagine you did it at a party.
A 40-year-old.
But just that everyone's emotions are heightened because they're drunk. And
they
go from partying to like, oh my God, George is dead. But anywho.
The greatest scene in the film. Which I imagine has to be Urban Legend. Is George the kid? Yeah, George Reeves making a bunch of public appearances.
Turns out it is Urban Legend.
In superhero outfits, and a kid comes up to him with a real gun and cocks it, and he's like, I want to see the bullets bounce off. He's like, son, look, you don't want to do that, because even if the bullets bounce off me, it could hit somebody else in the crowd. We don't want that to happen. Urban Legend?
Yeah, damn. Urban Legend.
Damn!
But yeah, this was in a weird period where Ben Affleck was in movie jail, kind of, coming off of Geely and all that shit.
Goddamn Geely. Nobody... That's the last we've seen from Martin Brest as well, speaking of Midnight Run.
Yeah, and so this was just sort of a, like, let's make this quieter, prestige-y sort of period movie, and he's really good in it.
I totally recommend it. This is the only movie I'll recommend from this entire episode.
Yeah.
Hollywoodland.
I think so.
So moving on to TV, for this and like the next episode or so, because 2006 in comparison to 1996 and 86, TV seasons start later. There's sports things happening.
It's true.
So not quite as eventful week in terms of TV compared to the other two decades, but some stuff did happen on September 4th. NBC aired behind the camera the unauthorized story of Different Strokes.
Oh, boy.
Which showcased the downfall of every child star on that show and had interview clips that featured both Gary Coleman and Todd Bridges. The movie actually ends with both of them.
They were available.
Yeah, they both go to Dana Plato's grave at the end of the movie.
But Conrad Bain, he didn't do shit, and he's dead.
Yeah. I don't know why they couldn't have just taken a stop at his grave, too. But anywho. Next day, September 5th, 2006, Katie Couric joins CBS as the anchor of Evening News. She would anchor that show for almost 5 years until May of 2011. It was a big to-do, but because she was the first female anchor of a nightly news show, but it didn't really improve the ratings.
You should have seen this broad read the news.
The ratings went up, but she never really closed the gap between CBS's evening news and the evening news shows on ABC and NBC.
Which are still relevant, not sure.
It's also like, even in 2006, I'm like, I have the internet. Mm. I don't really want to watch an hour of TV at 6 p.m. to find out what happened during the previous day.
That's what your grandparents watch before Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy.
But I'm getting old. I just got a TV antenna for the Olympics. my lady's into the Olympics. And I am watching the news, and like the PBS news and the local news, pretty well done.
Yeah.
Like, and unlike the news I do read on the internet, it's like actual hoofing it journalism.
Yeah, that's true.
People reporting things. Like it should be your news vegetables watching a nightly news show from one of the big networks.
But even though she wouldn't be super long for CBS News, her reign there did outlive My Network TV, which debuted the same day. September 5th was the debut of the channel My Network TV. So after UPN and WB merged, there were a lot of channels that were just like kind of rudderless. They didn't, what do we do now? enter my network TV, which had a different strategy than most channels. Instead of, you know, airing weekly shows, they had kind of a telenovela approach, though in English. Mm-hmm. But they would air, like, a show for 4 out of the 5 days, I believe. Yeah, no, wait, 5 out of 5 days, and then Saturday's like a recap of what happened that week in the telenovela. So they did that for a number of weeks, and that didn't really work out for them. In 2008,
that's why I wanted to emphasize earlier the idea that, like, if you... I lived in a city with, like, 4 local stations, more than there were, like, NBC or UPNs, more than to go around, and, like, that's all gone now. Except for, I got the antenna, and there's still local stations in San Francisco, but I can't imagine in, like, smaller towns you have
still
independent,
just unaffiliated, whatever's. They're not NBC, they're not CBS,
Fox. We have one called Coffee, and, like, they're, like, one night, I forget what happened or why the hell we were watching it, but it's over the air, and it's just, like, two women, hello, how is everybody? We're going to watch some Looney Tunes, I think they are. Looney Tunes. This one stars the bird Tweety. And I'm like, you're showing the public domain fucking AAP Merry Melodies, Colorado. I know what you're doing. He's like, and you know, we don't know that much about cartoons. And if you think you could do a better job, come host a show. I wrote a long and nasty email about how they should never air this program again without my involvement and how much experience I have and how well. Never wrote me back.
Were you picturing like a UHF situation where you just completely turn the ratings around?
It was so. Turn the ratings around on the Looney Tunes. These standard definition Looney Tunes cartoons at midnight
Uncle
on a Sunday.
Uncle Antista's Funhouse.
No, don't watch Adult Swim. You want to see Tweety Bird hit Sylvester with a pie. UPN.
My network TV's biggest success would come when it acquired WWE SmackDown.
Yeah,
sorry, we got wrestling twice.
Back.
Wrestling twice in one episode.
It's
yay.
Okay. It's okay. As long as it's historically accurate.
Yes.
It's having like miraculously not been acquired by a larger company. WWE is one of the biggest independent TV producers there is. It's very strange to think of them like that.
But it wasn't enough to save my network TV because like it would before the end of the decade it would bow out of being a full-time network. I think they still do some programming blocks, but nothing on the scale of what they attempted to do at the start. Other debuts this week, the two my network TV shows, Desire and Secrets, so they are definitely telenovelas, as well as two Fox comedies. Mm. One is called Happy Hour, which is about a guy who moves in with his friends after losing his job and girlfriend, and every night they go out to Happy Hour. But slightly more notable, is Till Death, which is a sitcom about a miserable couple played by Jolie Fisher from, I want to say Ellen?
Yeah.
She on?
Yeah.
And Brad Garrett, Ray's brother.
Also known, Diana, as the voice of Hulk Hogan in Hogan's Rock and Wrestling.
But the conceit is that the older couple are jealous of the newlywed couple that moves in. But we did an episode about the weirdest final seasons. Mm-hmm. And this was
kind of long, didn't it?
It did. And this is one of the...
Nobody watched it. It seemed like it had terrible ratings. No one seemed to watch it. Everyone hated it. And it just kept going.
Maybe it was like all of its ratings were coming from like just... muted Chinese restaurant viewing.
TGI Fridays that don't have sports airing. It seems like, I think it went like 4 seasons, and every season, basically because they couldn't like renegotiate contracts, the other couple would change.
Wow.
Like the younger couple would change.
Wow.
And the last season is just insane, like where it just like kind of turns in on itself, and they like acknowledge like, oh, the daughter of the miserable couple keeps changing, so like every episode played by a new person, and there is one character on the show that knows he's in a TV show.
Wow.
And he's like, did you guys hear that? Everyone's laughing. I hear a lot of laughing.
Wow.
Like, it's insane.
I suddenly want to watch that.
Yeah, seriously.
That sounds crazy.
But just the last season, because the first 3 seasons are just like rote sitcom crap.
I can't believe this is happening even now. Like, just why make a sitcom like that fucking milquetoast?
Yeah.
Premise-wise, I'm sure it was great.
Yeah.
That's all we have for TV. For games? This is
somewhat big week.
It's, Kengo Legend of the Nine, Bad Day L.A. Is that an American
McGee
game?
That's American McGee, which I remember looking, like, at coverage for this and being, like, slightly excited because I liked...
It seemed like an interesting premise.
I liked American McGee's Alice, and, it looks visually pretty neat. It's, like, kind of like an Adult Swim cartoon,
but it's like,
cartoon,
what, it's
but
like
game.
All Riot in L.A. or something like that?
Yeah, and it got terrible reviews, and I never bothered to check it out.
Loco Roco, a PSP exclusive with great music and utterly charming.
That sounds really familiar. I think I might have played this.
Yeah, like it's just like a bunch of cute little blobby creature. Yeah. You control it just with the shoulder buttons, leaning the the chorus left and right? No? Did it ring a bell, Diana?
Yes.
Beautiful music,
if it involves, like, two buttons, then there's a better chance that I played it.
Yeah. But most notably, and this is really cool.
Oh, wait. Did the blobs sometimes, like, split? They'd split apart and you try to get them back together and stuff? Yes. Yes, they did play this.
Yeah. And they were different colors. And, of course, the black blob, a little insensitive. But But this is really interesting. A game called Spy Hunter Nowhere to Run. And this is very... This feels very strange because we're 10 years removed from the resurrection of Spy Hunter, a series no one really remembers. But
I remember the first one.
It was an old arcade game and then resurrected on Xbox and PS2 with a great Spy Hunter game. Did you ever play that game?
The original, the arcade one?
The reboot from early 2000s. Very good. Like, all of a sudden became a viable franchise. Again, I love this show. This is 10 years after Spy Hunter became a viable franchise again. And so what was happening, the quality of the game had, you know, revalued its license. So they're like, let's make a movie with The Rock.
Right.
I think there's a trailer for it. It never came out. Nope. It got stuck in development hell. But
even 10 years ago, Rock was like promising to do movies that he would eventually never do.
And we hear me talk about, like, most movie games are terrible, but it's because games take so much longer to make. But this is, you can't blame people for not trying, because Midway did. They were making the game not only simultaneously with the movie, but before the movie. So the movie never came out, but the game about the movie did. It was completed and done. So, like, you don't have a Spy Hunter movie starring The Rock, but you do have a bad game starring The Rock in a Spy Hunter game.
I've got the tech. Meet me in the West Alley. We can cut through the Ardale.
But the transport isn't here.
Then just leave the damn thing where it is.
I didn't put 3 years' work into the Interceptor to just leave it for Nostra.
Without the tech, the Interceptor's nothing but a go-kart. You know that.
Yeah, but it's my go-kart.
Right. The Interceptor's the car, but I'm getting weirdly nostalgic for the Spy Hunter reboot game. I thought it was really good.
Like, boy, 10 years ago is not the time to have a Hollywood star in your game, because he did not look good.
He looks like a box.
He's
had a box for a head.
The interviews he does with for the game, it's like the last time you've seen The Rock with hair.
Oh, wow.
But even then, his hair looks like a texture. Love you, Rock.
Yeah.
I'm Team Rock in the Fast and the Furious debacle, by the way. Just wanted to take a side in that. No,
I'm all about family.
But that is games, and I think that pretty much wraps up the show.
Yeah.
I know I kept plugging stuff, but Laser Time is the show that started all of this. LaserTimePodcast.com. I can think of like 7 billion things we have entire shows about, up to and including Flintstone Kids with Little Toons. We did an episode about sitcoms that I was reminded of for some reason. Oh, very special episodes. That was a really that one episode in every series back in the 90s where every sitcom got real.
Yeah.
With a serious situation. Drugs, child molestation. It's a very fun episode of Laser Time. If you like this show, you'll love that. Also, Talking Simpsons. I think we got through this whole thing with no Simpsons references at all. But we have a whole show that chronologically breaks down every episode of The Simpsons, and we're just concluding the third season. You can check that out on LaserTimePodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And this show was brought to you through Patreon donations, patreon.com/lasertime. We have a weekly show, Bonus Time, where we talk about 2016.
Yes.
And it's also the exclusive home of Cheap Popcast, a pro wrestling podcast. So if the two WWE references in this episode got your appetite raging for more wrestling chatter, we have a whole hour of it every month on that.
Oh, and also, if you want to talk about video games with someone who can use more than two buttons, there's Video Game Apocalypse, hosted by Michael Raparez, every week, talking about new releases and news and games and stuff.
And, Brett has put me in charge of the most important part of 302010.
Oh, birthday is a doodly-doo.
Okay, so this week's birthday in history: Keanu Reeves, Cat Williams, Selma Hayek, Charlie Sheen, Beyonce Knowles, John DiMaggio, bite his shiny metal birthday, Freddie Mercury, Michael Keaton, Bob Newhart, Idris Elba, Macy Gray, Jeff Foxworthy, Wiz Khalifa, Bernie Sanders, Chris Christie, Martin Freeman, Patsy Cline, Jonathan Taylor Thomas,
JTT,
and wrestler Raven is 51 years old. But this week's mystery birthday person, born in 1973, was nominated for a Saturn Award.
Mm-hmm.
Was
that
in the show.
Make them a Canadian?
I don't know. Was in the show Charmed.
Shannon
Doherty. Rose McGowan.
Yep, and dated Marilyn Manson. It is Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan. What a lovely lady.
Oh, that dress she wore. Was it which MTV Awards was when she was with Marilyn Manson?
Yeah.
It was just chainmail in front and nothing in back.
Yeah.
She looked great.
What a gorgeous gal. Yep. I love her in, what is it, Death Proof? No, not Death Proof. The other one. Planet Terror.
Yeah.
Machine Gun Leg. Beautiful. This has been 302010. Thank you guys so much. We will see you next week.